Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Senior Editor Kelly Davio. Last year, biosimilar developer Pfizer submitted a citizen petition to the FDA, in which it called on the agency to issue guidance clarifying how drug sponsors can communicate about biosimilars. According to Pfizer, misleading statements create undue confusion about biosimilarity and interchangeability, and inflate the risks associated with physician-directed switching. They also cast doubt on these products that the FDA has deemed to be safe and effective. After the petition was filed, the Center for Biosimilars invited an expert group of stakeholders to discuss misinformation about biosimilars, as well as what steps are necessary to root out and address that misinformation. This time on the podcast, we're sharing a portion of that discussion with our listeners. You'll hear Jillian Woollett, DPhil, Senior Vice President at Avalere, in discussion with three panelists: Juliana Reed, the Vice President of Corporate Affairs and Global Biosimilars Lead at Pfizer; Carlos Sattler, MD, Head of Clinical Development and Medical Affairs at Sandoz; and Kashyap Patel, MD, Medical Oncologist and CEO of Carolina Blood and Cancer Care, as well as a member of the Center for Biosimilars Advisory Board.
So Pfizer recently submitted to the FDA a citizen petition asking for guidance on how product sponsors can communicate about biosimilars. Why did you see the need for this citizen petition?
Thanks, Jillian. So Pfizer saw in the marketplace educational materials and other materials created by reference product sponsors that created doubt and confusion about the safety of biosimilars. These materials, as we create the doubt and lower the confidence, will lower the uptake of biosimilars. So we felt it was necessary to file the citizens' petition and ask the FDA to proactively do something about the misinformation about biosimilars in the marketplace.
So Carlos, does Sandoz have an opinion on both the issues raised in the citizen petition and also the ask that Pfizer has for FDA to provide additional guidance?
Thanks, Jillian. We do. We actually do. We've also seen a lot of misinformation out there on biosimilars. I think it's really important to take into account the following. Healthcare providers, prescribers, must be free from any influence that inhibits them from making the best decisions for their patients. Misinformation and unbalanced information on biosimilars inhibits them from making these decisions. So we believe that something must be done. And we agree with the citizen's petition, but beyond the citizen's petition and the fact that it requests that guidance be authored or created by the FDA in order to take care of this misinformation, there are other steps that the FDA, we believe, can take. For example, they could partner with a Federal Trade Commissioner and identify these sources of misinformation. They could send letters to the sources of misinformation, to the companies and others that are doing this, to tell them to stop. They could make the names of these companies and other groups that are spreading misinformation public, so stakeholders, patients, physicians, and others know who are spreading this misinformation. And finally, they can continue with the educational efforts that they've embarked on, but specifically addressing some of the topics of misinformation that are out there.
So while we're being most polite in using the term misinformation, what are we actually saying? We're saying that some companies are promoting a concept or that is overtly misleading, that the biosimilars are somehow less safe, less effective, the nature of their development means they're less reliable than the reference product. Is that right?
So with the Pfizer's citizens petition, those misleading pieces of information are outlined in the citizens' petition. But I want to go back to what Carlos said. And we saw this when we launched the first biosimilars in Europe 10 years ago. And the same misinformation was introduced in Europe. And we're seeing that again today in the U.S. And it's to lower the confidence in the prescribers and the patients in using biosimilars. So we asked, 10 years ago, we asked the EMA to help us with that. And the same programs and actions were taken by, that Carlos outlined, were taken by the EMA 10 years ago, where they were the source, and this is key, the FDA, like the EMA, needs to be the primary source of education on biosimilars about their safety and efficacy, and we need to help distribute and disseminate that information. They need, the FDA, like the EMA, needs to combat the misinformation that's out there about biosimilars and send letters to these companies, the reference product companies that are doing this, or other organizations. It's time, we need that here in the US.
So, Kasia, as yes. As a physician, as a provider, what have you seen from the clinical side working with patients about this sort of misinformation that's out there? Are you seeing it in day-to-day practice? Do you understand what's being alluded to here by the sponsors?
Thanks, Julian. I think I have a little different perspective on this. I was not so much aware of this misinformation campaign, for the lack of better words. I would reuse that. But I've done some intensive physician education at 5 national meetings in last 2 months. And I was very unpleasantly surprised to find out so many misconceptions amongst physicians who are the prescribers. I spoke at three large GPO meetings and one of the National Oncology Conference. And first question a lot of physicians asked me was, so what's the difference between a generic and biosimilar? And I said, oh my God. I mean, I think, where do I start here? Because there's a huge difference between a generic drug and a biosimilar. A generic drug do not have to do trials. They are simply chemical compounds called API. You buy it in a bulk like kilograms or a ton and convert them into the tablets. But because there was a perception that there's not a lot of difference between the generic drug and biosimilar, they say, well, why are they priced so high? And I said, listen, these drugs have to undergo multiple steps that establishes the totality of evidence compared to the reference product. It's not an easy task. It's not an easy solution. And that's one of the reasons why you don't see a huge price drop. You definitely would see some sort of incremental decline in the price, but you don't expect them to behave like generic drugs that happened back in 2004, 5, 6 when the paclitaxel went generic, when carboplatin went generic, when the cisplatin went generic. So there's a lot of misconception. It may not be intentional that they've not learned, but we have to do a lot of additional education at physician level to help them become aware of what biosimilars are as a different class. And the second observation I made was patients were not as much reluctant to accept biosimilars. And I'll share when our discussion points in the direction that patients were least likely to resist adoption of biosimilars. I think the providers, the nurses, the mid-levels, and maybe the peers are the team that we need to work mm-hmm. with in educating about biosimilars and what the class of drug is.
Well, and certainly I think what we've seen is half of the problem is not explicitly wrong statements, but they're ill impressions, and it starts with the name. That for basically 15 years, we've seen biosimilar means similar and not the same. But that forgets and no clinically meaningful differences having been determined by FDA. Now, obviously, at this point in the debate, we're not going to rename biosimilars mm-hmm, as anything else. So what do we now do about it, given that complete information is a challenge? People use shorthand. Does this mean that we have to target specific populations in those settings where this misleading information is already out there? Is it certain stakeholders? For instance, you've alluded to the patients perhaps being less concerned if their healthcare providers have confidence. So is it physicians, patients, nurses, payers? For any of the panel, are there particular people we've got to have having this full understanding, using FDA with primary sources? FDA does have on their website already mm-hmm. that every biosimilar approved by them is as safe and effective as any other biologic. What is the form of the information that we need? What do these stakeholders need to receive?
So Julie? I'll, okay, go ahead.
So I think the stakeholders need to receive, and this is key in order to combat the misinformation, they need to receive the FDA educational materials. And as either industry or physician groups or patient groups, other stakeholders, insurers and payers, we need to help disseminate that. We need to proactively help the FDA to get that, those materials down to the physician office level. It's the source. The FDA needs to be the source of all truths about biosimilars.
Just as in Europe, we saw that with EMA and with the Commission. Carlos, as both a provider and, I mean, as a physician and as a sponsor, what have you seen? Similarly, you have launched products too.
Sure. So just a couple of thoughts based on the question that you asked. You're right that because biosimilars are highly similar to the reference product but not identical by the nature of the fact that they're biologics, that is a handicap, if you may, although biologics are inherently variable. That's just the way they are because unlike a generic that is manufactured through chemical synthesis, biologics need to be produced in living organisms, and that, by its nature, introduces some variability that occurs from lot to lot, for example. And I think a lot of the misinformation or misunderstanding comes from that. A generic is identical to the reference product because it's a small molecule, and therefore you expect the same clinical effect. Biologics are so complex, and the biosimilar is not identical to the reference product, maybe you're going to see some difference in clinical effect. But like you mentioned, even though there is this variability in biologics that makes a biosimilar not be identical to the reference product, it must meet the criteria of no difference in efficacy, safety, and immunogenicity.
Yes.
And I think that's what's lost. And I think education, basic education on what a biologic is, would go a long way. Obviously adapted to the audience. But to add to what Juliana said, where should the source of education come from? Certainly the FDA, I completely agree. It's a trusted source. It's independent from manufacturers. But I'd like to talk about how EMA went about this, right? EMA started education, but they brought in a series of stakeholders in order to create guidance documents. This included manufacturers, it included professional societies, it included patient and patient advocacy groups, it included payers and others. And so now they created this consensus amongst all stakeholders that put out educational material, and I think that went a long way. I think the FDA should look at that and maybe try to do something that is similar. In the end, I think it is a responsibility of many stakeholders to educate about biosimilars, not just the FDA, and it could be done through a one single multi-stakeholder setting, but certainly patient advocacy groups, professional societies, manufacturers, managed care to their membership should also assume that responsibility. I think for biosimilars to succeed, the educational effort has to be multi-pronged.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Not So Different. If you'd like to hear more of the discussion among our stakeholders, visit our show notes for a link to the full program. And remember, if you like our podcast, you can rate this show at iTunes. Until next time, find us at centerforbiosimilars.com.